Chapter 8. How many times I awakened and returned to sleep, I do not know. Twice I found bread and meat and water on a tray by the door. Both times I emptied the tray. My cell was almost pitch dark and very chilly. I waited there, and I waited. Then they came for me. The door swung open and a feeble light entered. I blinked at it as I was called forth. The corridor without was filled to overflowing with armed men, so I wasn't about to try anything. I rubbed at the stubble on my chin and went where they took me. After a long walk, we came to the hall of the spiral stair and began to ascend. I asked no questions as we moved, and no one offered me any information. When we reached the top, I was conducted further into the palace proper. They took me to a warm, clean room and ordered me to strip, which I did. Then I entered a steaming tub of water, and a servant came forth and scrubbed me and shaved me and trimmed my hair. When I was dry again, I was given fresh garments of black and of silver. I donned them, and a black cloak was hung about my shoulders, its clasp a silver rose.
"You are ready, come this way."
I followed him, and the guard followed me. I was taken far to the back of the palace, where a smith placed manacles about my wrists, fetters on my ankles with chains upon them, too heavy for me to break. Had I resisted, I knew I would have been beaten unconscious and the result would have been the same. I had no desire to be beaten unconscious again, so I complied. Then the chains were taken up by several of the guards, and I was led back toward the front of the palace. I had no eyes for the magnificence that lay all about me. I was a prisoner. I would probably soon be dead or on the rack. There was nothing I could do right now. A glance out of the window showed me that it was early evening, and there was no place for nostalgia as I passed through rooms where we had played as children. I was led up a long corridor and into the great dining room. There were tables all over the place, and people seated all about them, many of whom I knew. All the fine gowns and suits of amber burned about me on the bodies of the nobles, and there was music beneath the torchlight and food already upon the tables, though no one was eating yet. I saw faces that I recognized, like Flora's, and some strange faces. There was the minstrel, Lord Reynes. He had been knighted by me, whom I had not seen in centuries. He turned his eyes away when my gaze fell upon him. I was taken to the foot of the huge center table and seated there. The guards stayed and stood behind me. They fastened the ends of my chains to rings fresh set in the floor. The seat at the head of my table was as yet unoccupied. I did not recognize the woman to my right, but the man to my left was Julian. I ignored him and stared at the lady, a little wisp of a blonde. "Good evening. I don't believe we've been introduced. My name is Corwin." She looked at the man at her right for support, a heavy, red-headed guy with lots of freckles. He looked away and suddenly became engaged in an animated conversation with the woman to his right. "It's all right to talk with me. Honest, it's not contagious." She managed a weak smile and said,
"I'm Carmel. How are you, Prince Corwin?"
"That's a sweet name, and I'm just fine. What's a nice girl like you doing at a place like this?" She took a quick drink of water.
"Corwin,"
said Julian louder than necessary,
"I think the lady finds you offensive and obnoxious."
"What she said to you so far this evening?" He didn't blush. He whitened.
"That will be enough from you."
I stretched then, and rattled my chains on purpose. Outside of the effect it produced, it also showed me how much slack I had. Not enough, of course. Eric had been careful. "Come closer and whisper me your objections, brother." But he didn't. I had been the last to be seated, so I knew the time was near at hand. And it was. There came 5 trumpet notes from 6 trumpets, and Eric entered the hall. Everybody stood, except for me. The guards had to drag me to my feet by means of the chains and hold me there. Eric smiled and descended the stair to my right. I could barely see his own colors beneath the ermine robe that he wore. He moved to the head of the table and stood before his chair. A servant came and stood behind him, and the wine stewards made their rounds, pouring. When all the glasses were filled, he raised his.
"May you dwell forever in amber, which endureth forever."
Everyone raised his glass, except for me.
"Pick it up."
"Shove it up." He didn't, only glared. But I leaned forward quickly then and raised my glass. There were a couple hundred people between us, but my voice carried, and Eric's eyes were upon me all the while as I said to Eric, who sits at the foot of the table. No one moved to touch me as Julian emptied his glass upon the floor. All the others did the same, but I managed to quaff most of mine before it was struck from my hand. Eric seated himself then, and the nobles followed suit, and I was released to fall into my chair. The serving began, and since I was hungry I ate as well as the rest of them, and better than most. There was constant music, and the meal lasted for over 2 hours. No one said a word to me during the whole time, and I said nothing more myself. But my presence was felt, and our table was quieter than the others. Cain sat farther up along the table, at Eric's right hand. I gathered that Julian was out of favor. Neither Random nor Deirdre was present. There were many other nobles whom I recognized, some of whom I had once counted as friends, but none of these would return my glances. I gathered then that it only required a small formality for Eric to be king in Amber, and this followed shortly. After dinner there were no speeches. Eric simply stood. There came another flash of trumpets and a raucous sound upon the air. Then there was a procession leading all the way to the throne room of Amber. I knew what was coming next. Eric stood before the throne, and everybody bowed. Except for me, that is, and I was forced to my knees anyway. Today was the day of his coronation. There was silence. Then Cain bore in the cushion which held the crown of Amber. He knelt and froze in that position, offering it. Then I was jerked to my feet and dragged forward. I knew what was about to happen. It came upon me in a flash, and I fought. But I was beaten down and brought to my knees at the foot of the stair before the throne. The music rose up softly. It was Greensleeves. And somewhere at my back, Julian said,
"Behold the crowning of a new king in Amber."
Then to me, in a whisper,
"Take up the crown and hand it to Eric. He will crown himself."
I stared at the crown of Amber upon the crimson cushion Cain held. It was wrought of silver and had 7 high points, each topped by a gemstone. It was studded with emeralds, and there were 2 huge rubies at either temple. I didn't move, thinking of the times I had seen the face of our father beneath it. No, I felt a blow upon my left cheek.
"Take it, and give it to Eric."
I tried to strike at him, but my chains were drawn tight. I was struck again. I stared at the high, sharp peaks. Very well. I reached for it. I held it in both hands for a moment, then quickly placed it on my own head and declared, "I crown me, Corwin, King of Amber." It was removed immediately and replaced upon the cushion. Several blows fell upon my back. There came a murmuring throughout the hall.
"Now pick it up and try it again. Take it and hand it to Eric."
Another blow fell. "Okay." Feeling my shirt grow wet, this time I hurled it, hoping to put out one of Eric's eyes. He caught it in his right hand and smiled down at me as I was beaten.
"Thank you. Now hear me, all you present, and those of you who listen in shadow. I assume the crown and throne this day. I take into my hand the scepter of the kingdom of Amber. I have won the throne fairly, and I take it and hold it by the right of my blood."
Liar. A hand was clapped over my mouth.
"I crown myself Eric the First, King of Amber."
"Long live the king! Long live the king! Long live the king!"
Then he leaned forward and whispered to me,
"Your eyes have looked upon the fairest sight they will ever hold. Guards, take Corwin away to the smithy, and let his eyes be burnt from out his head. Let him remember the sights of this day as the last he might ever see. Then cast him into the darkness of the deepest dungeon beneath Amber, and let his name be forgotten."
I spat and was beaten. I fought every step of the way, but was taken forth from the hall. No one would look upon me as I went. And the last thing I remember was the sight of Eric seated upon the throne, pronouncing his blessing upon the nobles of Amber, and smiling. That which he said was done to me, and mercifully I fainted before it was finished. I have no idea how much later it was that I awakened within absolute blackness and felt the terrible pains within my head. Perhaps it was then that I pronounced the curse, or perhaps it had been at the time that the white-hot irons had descended. I don't remember. But I knew that Eric would never rest easy upon the throne, for the curse of a prince of Amber, pronounced in a fullness of fury, is always potent. I clawed at the straw in the absolute blackness of my cell, and no tears came. That was the horror of it. After a time, only you and I, gods, know how long sleep came again. When I awakened, there was still the pain. I rose to my feet. I measured off the dimensions of my cell, 4 paces in width, 5 in length. There was a lavatory hole in the floor and a straw-tick mattress in a corner. The door contained a small slot at the bottom, and behind it there was a tray which held a stale piece of bread and a bottle of water. I ate and I drank, but I was not refreshed. My head ached so, and there was nothing of peace within me. I slept as much as I could, and no one came to see me. I awakened and crossed my cell and felt for food and ate it when I found it. I slept as much as I could, and after 7 sleeps, the pain was gone from out my eye sockets. I hated my brother who was king in Amber. Better he had killed me. I wondered at the popular reaction but could not guess. When the darkness reached as far as Amber, however, I knew that Eric would have his regrets. This much I knew, and this comforted me. Thus began my days of darkness, and I had no way of measuring their passage. Even if I had had eyes, I could not have distinguished day from night in that place. Time went on its way, ignoring me. There were occasions when I broke into a sweat over this and shivered. Had I been there months, only hours, or weeks? Or had it been years? I forgot all of how time I slept, I paced, I knew exactly where to place my feet and when to turn. And I reflected upon things I had done and hadn't done. Sometimes I would sit cross-legged and breathe slowly and deeply and empty my mind and keep it that way for as long as I could. This helped thinking of nothing. Eric had been clever. Although the power lived within me, now it was useless. A blind man cannot walk among shadows. My beard had grown down to my chest and my hair was long. I was always hungry at first, but after a time my appetite waned. Sometimes I grew dizzy when I stood up too rapidly. I could still see in my nightmares, but this hurt me even more when I awakened. Later, though, I felt somewhat distant from the events which had led up to this. It was almost as though they had happened to a different person. And this, too, was true. I had lost a lot of weight. I could visualize myself, pallid and thin. I couldn't even cry, though I felt like it a couple of times. There was something wrong with my tear ducts. It was a dreadful thing that any man should be brought to this. Then one day there came a light scratching upon the door. I ignored it. It came again, and still I did not respond. Then I heard my name whispered in the interrogative. I crossed the cell. Yes.
It's me, Ryan. How are you?
I laughed at that. Fine. Oh, just fine. Steak and champagne every night and dancing girls. God, you should make the scene sometime.
I'm sorry that there is nothing I can do for you.
I could feel the pain in his voice. I know.
I would if I could.
I know that too.
I brought you something. Here.
The little gate at the bottom of the cell door creaked slightly as it swung inward several times. What is it?
Some clean clothes and 3 loaves of fresh bread, a head of cheese, some beef, 2 bottles of wine, a carton of cigarettes, and a lot of matches.
My voice caught in my throat. Thanks, Reen. You're all right. How did you arrange this?
I know the guard who's standing duty this shift. He won't talk. He owes me too much.
He might try to cancel his debts by squealing, so don't do it again, much as I appreciate it. Needless to say, I'll dispose of the evidence.
I wish it had turned out different, Corwin.
You and me both. Thanks for thinking of me when you are ordered not to.
That part was easy.
How long have I been in this place?
4 months and 10 days.
So what's new in Amber?
Airy rains, that's all.
Where's Julian?
Back in the forest of Arden with his guard.
Why?
Some strange things made it through Shadow recently.
I see. How about Cain?
He's still in Amber, enjoying himself. Wenching and drinking, mostly.
And Gerard?
He's admiral of the entire fleet.
I sighed with a bit of relief. I was afraid his withdrawal during the naval engagement might have cost him something with Eric. And what of Randon?
He's up the hall a ways.
What? He was taken?
Yes. He walked a pattern in Reb and showed up here with a crossbow. He wounded Eric before he was taken.
Really? Why wasn't he slain?
Well, rumor has it he's married a noblewoman of Reba. Eric didn't want to court an incident with Reba at this point. Moira has quite a kingdom, and there is talk that Eric is even considering asking her to be his queen. All gossip, of course, but interesting.
Yes.
She liked you, didn't she?
Somewhat. How did you hear?
I was present when Randon was sentenced. I got to speak with him for a moment. Lady Vielle, who claims to be his wife, has asked to join him in prison. Eric is not yet certain how to reply.
I thought upon the blind girl who I had never met, and I wondered at this. How long ago did all this happen?
34 days. That was when Randon showed up. A week later, Vielle made her request.
She must be a strange woman if she really loves Randon.
Those were my sentiments. I can't think of a more unusual combination.
If you should get to see him again, give him my regards and my regrets.
Yes.
How fare my sisters?
Dardra and Leovella remain in Reba. The Lady Florimel has been enjoying Eric's favors and stands high in the present court. I do not know where Fiona is presently.
Has anything more been heard of Blaze? I am sure that he died.
He must have died. His body was never recovered, though.
What of Benedict?
As absent as ever.
How about Brand?
No word.
Then I guess that covers the family tree as it stands at present. Have you written any new ballads?
No, he said. I'm still working on the Siege of Amber, but it will be an underground hit, if at all.
I reached my hand out through the tiny gate at the bottom of the door. I would clasp hands with thee. I felt his hand touch mine. It was good of thee to do this thing for me. Don't do it again, though. It would be foolish to risk Eric's wrath. He squeezed my hand, muttered something, and was gone. I found his care package and stuffed myself with the meat, which was the most perishable item. I ate a lot of the bread to accompany it, and I realized that I had almost forgotten how good food can taste. Then I grew drowsy and slept. I don't think I slept very long, and when I awoke, I opened one of the bottles of wine. It didn't take as much as usual, in my weakened condition, to get me kind of high. I had a cigarette, sat down on my mattress, leaned back against the wall, and mused. I remembered Ryan as a child. I was already full grown by then, and he was a candidate for court jester. A thin, wise kid. People had kidded him too much. Me included. But I wrote music, composed ballads, and he'd picked up a lute somewhere and had taught himself how to use it. Soon we were singing with voices together, raised and all like that. And before long I took a liking to him, and we worked together, practicing the martial arts. He was lousy at them. But I felt kind of sorry for the way I had treated him earlier. What with the way he had dug my stuff, so I forced the fake graces upon him and also made him a passable saber man. I never regretted it. And I guess he didn't either. Before long, he became minstrel to the court of Amber. I had called him my page all that while, and when the wars beckoned against the dark things out of shadow called Werimunkin, I made him my squire, and we had ridden off to the wars together. I knighted him upon the battlefield at Jones Falls, and he had deserved it. After that, he had gone on to become my better when it came to the ways of words and music. His colors were crimson, and his words were golden. I loved him, as one of my two or three friends in Amber. I didn't think he'd take the risk he had to bring me a decent meal, though. I didn't think anyone would. I had another drink and smoked another cigarette in his name to celebrate him. He was a good man. I wondered how long he would survive. I threw all the butts into the head and also, eventually, the empty bottle. I didn't want anything around to show that I had been enjoying myself, should a sudden inspection be held. I ate all the good food he had brought me, and I felt surfeited for the first time since I had been in Durance. I saved the last bottle for one massive spell of drunkenness and forgetfulness, and after that time had passed, I returned to my cycle of recriminations. I hoped mainly that Eric had no measure of our complete powers. He was king and Amber, granted, but he didn't know everything. Not yet. Not the way Dad had known. There was a million in one shot that might still work in my favor. So much so and so different that at least it served to grant me my small purchase upon sanity. There in the grip of despair. But maybe I did go mad for a time, I don't know. There are days that are great blanks to me now. As I stand here on the brink of chaos. God knows what they held, and I'll never see a shrink to find out. There are none of you good doctors could cope with my family anyway. I lay there and I paced there within the numbing darkness. I grew quite sensitive to sounds. I listened to the scurve of rats' feet through straw, the distant moaning of other prisoners, the echoes of a guard's footsteps as he approached with a tray of food. I began estimating distances and direction from things like this. I suppose I became more sensitive to odors also, but I tried not to think about them too much. Aside from the imaginable, nauseating ones, there was, for a long while, what I would swear to be the odor of decaying flesh. I wondered, if I were to die, how long would it be before someone took notice? How many chunks of bread and bowls of slop would go uneaten before the guard thought to check within after my continued existence? The answer to that one could be very important. The death odor was around for a long while. I tried to think in terms of time again, and it seemed that it persisted for over a week, though I rationed myself carefully, resisting the compulsion, the handy temptation. For as long as I could, I finally found myself down to my final pack of cigarettes. I tore it open and lit one. I had had a carton of Salems and I had smoked 11 packs. That was 220 cigarettes. I had once timed myself with one, and it had taken me 7 minutes to smoke it. That made for a total of 1,540 minutes spent smoking, or 25 hours and 40 minutes. I was sure I had spent at least an hour between cigarettes, more like an hour and a half. Say an hour and a half. Now figure that I was sleeping 6 to 8 hours per day. That left 16 to 18 waking hours. I guessed I was smoking 10 or 12 per day. So that meant maybe 3 weeks had passed since Ryan's visit. He had told me it was 4 months and 10 days since the coronation, which meant that it was now around 5 months. I nursed my last pack, enjoying each one like a love affair. When they were all gone, I felt depressed. Then a lot more time must have passed. I got to wondering about Eric. How was he making out his lage? What problems was he encountering? What was he up to right now? Why hadn't he been around to torment me? Could I ever truly be forgotten in Amber, even by imperial decree? Never, I decided. And what of my brothers? Why had none of them contacted me? It would be so easy to draw forth my trump and break Eric's decree. None did, though. I thought for a long while upon Moy Wire, the last woman I had loved. What was she doing? Did she think of me ever? Probably not. Maybe she was Eric's mistress by now, or his queen. Did she ever speak to him of me? Again. Probably not. And what of my sisters? Forget it, bitches all day. I had been blinded once before by a cannon flashback in the 18th century on the Shadow Earth, but it only lasted for around a month and my sight had returned. Eric had had a permanent thing in mind, however, when he had given his order. I still perspired and shuddered and sometimes woke up screaming whenever memory of the white-hot irons returned to me, hung there before my eyes, and then the contact. I moaned softly and continued to pace. There was absolutely nothing I could do. That was the most horrible part of the whole thing. I was as helpless as an embryo. To be born again into sight and fury was a thing for which I would give my soul. Even for an hour with a blade in my band to duel once again with my brother. I lay back on my mat and slept. When I awakened, there was food and I ate once again and paced. My fingernails and my toenails had grown long. My beard was very long and my hair fell across my eyes, constantly. I felt filthy and I itched all the time. I wondered whether I had fleas. That a prince of Amber could be brought to this state drew a terrible emotion from the center of my being, wherever that may be. I had been reared to think of us as invincible entities, clean and cool and diamond hard, like our pictures on the trumps. Obviously, we were not. At least, we were enough like other men to have our resources. I played mental games. I told myself stories. I reviewed pleasant memories. There were many of these. I recalled the elements, wind, rain, snow, the summer's warmth, and the spring's cool breezes. I had had a small airplane on the Shadow Earth, and when I flew it, I had enjoyed the sensation. I recalled the glistening panoramas of color and distance, the miniaturization of cities, the broad blue sweep of sky, the herds of clouds. Where were they now? And the clean expanse of the ocean beneath my wings. I remembered women I had loved, parties, military engagements. And when all was done and I could help it no longer, I thought of Amber. One time when I did so, my tear glands began to function again. I wept. After an interminable time, a time filled with blackness and many sleeps, I heard footsteps which paused before the door to my cell, and I heard the sound of a key within the lock. It was a time so long after Ryan's visit that I had forgotten the taste of the wine and the cigarettes. I could not realty estimate its span, but it had been long. There were two men in the corridor. I could tell this from their footsteps even before I heard the sounds of their voices, one of the voices I recognized. The door swung open and Julian said my name. I didn't answer right away, and he repeated it.
Go in. Come here.
Since I didn't have much choice in the matter, I drew myself erect and advanced. I stopped when I knew I was near him. What do you want?
Come with me.
He took my arm. We walked along the corridor and he said nothing, and I'd be damned if I'd ask him any questions. From the echoes I could tell when we entered the big hall. Soon after, he guided me up the stair, up, and into the palace proper we went. I was taken to a room and seated in a chair. A barber set to work cutting my hair and my beard. I didn't recognize his voice when he asked me if I wanted the beard trimmed or removed. Cut it off. A manicurist set to work on my nails, all 20 of them. Then I was bathed and someone helped me to dress in clean garments. They hung loose on me. I was loused also, but forget that. Then I was led into another black place, filled with music and the odors of good food and the sounds of many voices and some laughter. I recognized it to be the dining room. The voices subsided a bit as Julian led me in and seated me. I sat there until the trumpet notes, to which I was forced to rise. I heard the toast called out,
"To Eric the First, King of Amber. Long live the King."
I didn't drink to that, but no one seemed to notice. It was Kane's voice that had called out the toast from far up along the table. I ate as much as I could because it was the best meal I had been offered since the coronation. I gathered from conversation overheard that today was the anniversary of Eric's coronation, which meant I had spent an entire year in the dungeons. No one spoke to me, and I didn't make any overtures. I was present as a ghost only. To humiliate me and to serve as a reminder to my brothers, no doubt, as to the price of defying our liege, and everyone had been ordered to forget me. It went on well into the night. Someone kept me well provided with wine, which was something, and I sat there and listened to the music of all the dances. The tables had been removed by this time, and I was seated off somewhere in a corner. I got stinking drunk and was half dragged, half carried back to my cell in the morning when the whole thing was over, save for the cleaning up. My only regret was that I hadn't gotten sick enough to dirty the floor or someone's pretty garments. Thus ended the first year of darkness.